It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day here in Hawaii, Nay, and just excited. I got a couple things going on. I had Dr. Carl Berg online, and we lost him, but he's calling from Kauai. And I also have in the studio with me Miss, hold on just a moment, Sylvia Thompson. Disconnected again. But anyway, and we're going, Sylvia is actually the owner and chef of Greens and Vines, and we're going to be talking about raw foods and eating raw and eating healthy, and hopefully this is my Easter present to many of you, to include my own little chubby self. So it's not really for you, but I'm going to share it with you. It's actually for me. I need to do a little better in consumption and what I eat. Watch it. I tend to watch what I eat. I just tend to, after watching it, I wanted to incorporate it on my waistline. So, but we're going to talk about that and some of the environmental issues. And Dr. Carl Berg is calling from Kauai and with the Surf Rider Foundation, and they have some announcements, and let's go with him. Good morning, Dr. Berg. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. As you can hear, that where you and I went to that restaurant at Greens and Vines, I actually have Sylvia here, who you met and spoke with.
And we won't believe how many people I've been telling on Kauai about that place. And how the lasagna was so fantastic, etc. And how that we need it here on Kauai.
Yeah. And so I, when I saw that you liked it, I thought, okay, he's a raw vegan, right? And so can't get any better judges than that. But anyway, what do you have with for us from Kauai there regarding the Surf Rider? You got a press release and some other activities going on?
I don't know how to. So a press release came out from the national headquarters of the Surf Rider Foundation. And in the state of Hawaii, we have five chapters, one on each island, two on the Big Island. And I'm in the head of the chapter on the island of Kauai. Mm-hmm. And I'm also the head of the Blue Water Task Force on Kauai. And Surf Rider has 50 chapters all over the nation. And they have Blue Water Task Force, which go out and monitor the water quality in the ocean and lakes. Now, a little bit about Surf Rider. Surf Rider Foundation is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of our world's oceans, waves, and beaches through a powerful activist network.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we, one of our mottos is care. We are involved in conservation, activism, research, and education. So the Blue Water Task Force fits into that, where we go out and on Kauai, I'll be talking about, we go out once a month and we sample the ocean, the beaches, the surf sites, and the streams, and we are testing for fecal-indicating bacteria, and we do the exact same test as the Department of Health in the exact same way with the exact same controls, and we measure how much Enterococcus bacteria is in the water, which is the state standard as set up in Hawaii administrative rules. We don't duplicate what the Department of Health does. They're very limited in their staff and their sampling. Although I was told that last year, in 2015, they took over 4,400 water samples throughout the state. But in our case, we go to places that they don't sample. And this is significant because much of their funding comes under the Clean Water Act, the Federal Clean Water Act, through the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and specifically the Beach Act, which funds monitoring of coastal waters and beaches. So the Department of Health goes out and monitors the water at recreational beaches all around the island. And on Kauai, they have five beaches, which are what they call Tier 1. These are the most heavily used beaches on our island.
Mm-hmm.
Every island gets designated these. And they test them twice a week for fecal indicating bacteria. And the idea is if they suddenly see a lot of these bacteria, then that means there is a public health risk, not from the bacteria per se, but from all the other bacteria and viruses that are associated with waste, fecal matter. And so if they find a sewer break or an overflowing cesspool, they will immediately put up a warning sign saying this is contaminated, stay out, and they continue to test until such time that the waters have cooled. Unfortunately, they also put out a warning like last week when we had a lot of rain and the land gets washed of all the yucky material and it goes into the ocean, and rather testing and then waiting 24 hours for the results and then putting up warning signs, the Department of Health is very reactive and puts out a brown water advisory, telling people that the water's yucky and you should stay out.
Mm-hmm.
So these advisories are sent out to the news media and to individuals who have asked for them. So I get them for every place in the Hawaiian Islands. Whenever they issue one, I get the email. Now, I'm going to just read you one that came out a year or so ago, but they're the same basic ones that came out the other day. It says the brown water advisory is being issued for, and in our case it was the island of Kauai, due to the heavy rains. The public is advised to stay out of floodwaters and stormwater runoff due to, and this is the great part, overflowing cesspools, sewer manholes, pesticides, animal fecal matter, dead animals, pathogens, chemicals and associated flood debris. Turbid water runoff have been known to attract sharks due to possible dead animals being washed into the ocean. If coastal waters are brown, stay out. So that's a pretty dire warning and is a good representative of what's in the water that comes out of the streams and canals and off the land. But the unfortunate part is that they do not put up warning signs anywhere. So how are people supposed to know that this is really yucky? And the other day we had heavy, heavy rain Thursday night, and Friday morning I went down to the beach, Kalapaki Bay. The water, it was terrible. It was mud. It was like pudding almost. And there were the tourists off the cruise ship swimming in it and walking through the stream, et cetera, because nobody knows that it's potentially dangerous. So I've been actively trying to get the Department of Health to actually put up signs on the beach like they do when there's a shark sighting or when there is heavy rip currents or something, that they put a sign on the beach and say, hey, guess what? If this is dangerous, stay out of the waters. But they refuse to do that. But the next worst case, and why we're coming out, is that they also have this large-scale monitoring program, and Surf Rider, as citizen scientists, have their monitoring program, but they ignore all the data, and they will not put up warning signs on any of the beaches or streams that are heavily polluted based upon their data. Now, the one notable exemption is the Alawai Canal. So your listeners on Oahu may may see those that say, you know, stay out of the water and don't eat the fish and stuff. And that's because the water is heavily polluted. And the counts may be about 1,000 bacteria per 100 ml. But on Kauai recently, we've been studying all, for the past 5 years, all of the streams, and many of them are averaging about 1,000, the same as the Alawai, about 1,000 per 100 ml. But there's one stream down in Mahalalupu that is averaging around 10,000 bacteria. And I should add right here that the federal guidance from EPA and the state law says that the geometric mean of 5 samples should be 35 bacteria per 100 ml. And what we're measuring on an average, geometric mean average, is over 10,000. Sometimes it's 25,000. So this stream has to be terribly polluted, but they refuse to put up a warning sign. And so a couple of things have happened recently that have caused surf riders on a nationwide basis to start activating and become advocates of having beach signs put up in Hawaii and all over the nation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that brought this about was that back in September, the President of the United States had a conference and a webcast about opening science and innovation of people, by people, for the people, and addressing societal and scientific challenges through citizen science and crowdsourcing. So they realized that the government agencies can't do everything and that they need to help out by doing citizen science, which is what Surf Rider does. But the big thing that got us going was what happened in Flint, Michigan, where for over 2 years the citizens were complaining to the government about how filthy their drinking water was. They even had citizen scientists do tests, and a young doctor did blood tests. And it was finally, after a couple of years, that they finally admitted there was a serious lead poisoning in the water. And it's an example of the government just dismissing citizen science, of not listening to it, not caring about the public, worried more about the economic impact. And we saw a parallel here, not as severe as blood poisoning in kids, but the fact that our stream waters have been documented as being chronically polluted with fecal matter. And the Department of Health is not doing anything about putting up signs.
Mm-hmm.
So we have met with the head of the Department of Health. We have met with the assistant head of Department of Health, Keith Kawaoka, who's the head of Environmental Health Section. And we're asking for a policy change here. And we're going through this press release. We're letting people know that that the water in these streams and canals is probably polluted and you shouldn't go in it. We're asking that they put up warning signs. We're saying that they should really be more proactive looking at their own Department of Health data and when it's polluted, doing something. And in general, being more responsive to people and citizen scientists as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And Surf Rider has a number of examples nationwide. Newport, Oregon is one of where Surf Rider people found that it was polluted, went to the local government, and the local government said, oh my gosh, we better do something about that. And they did. They cleaned up the source of the sewage, and they then engaged with Surf Rider to do continual monitoring of it to make sure that there was no more pollution on the beaches in Newport, Oregon. So government and private groups can work together very effectively or they can be at total odds, as we have in Hawaii here.
So can you share with us when you expect them to respond to you here on this particular press release, or is there anything you're waiting for them to decide here in the next week, 2 weeks?
As you know, we went over on Friday and met with them,
mm-hmm.
and spoke with them about this, and this was Friday 10 days ago, or 8 days ago, and and at that time, we asked them to please, release the survey for Mahala Lapu that is indicating why the water is so badly polluted. We asked them to start posting warning signs everywhere. And third, we asked them to start changing the Hawaii administrative rules so that warning signs would be posted when any pollutant was detected, not just human sewage.
Mm-hmm.
Because animal sewage, as in cows or pigs, contain lots of pathogens that make people sick. Leptospirosis is the most glaring one because this is really prevalent in Hawaii, and a lot of people get it swimming in our freshwater streams. And from that, from the first report that we had published in a paper, and it was on KITV News, I'd like to thank Laurie Yamada for putting that on, they did respond in saying that they would be looking into changing the Hawaii administrative rule, but they did not say that they would put signs up right away. So we're beginning making this known publicly, and I really want to thank you, Carol, for having me on the radio. Make it known nationwide that Surfrider, as a national organization, is concerned about water quality issues. And if the Beach Act does not get refunded by Congress, then there's nobody out there except Surfrider and waterkeepers and a few other groups who are going to be monitoring how polluted our waters are.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that recreational waters and making people sick is just as important as drinking water issues, too. So we're hoping to get a response back from that meeting and from the letter, follow-up letter that I sent to them.
Okay.
And we're hoping that we will get some real action. If we don't in the next couple of weeks, then Surfrider Foundation is going to go on a full court press and ask people to email or call into the Department of Health and ask for some real action.
Well, count us in on the getting the word out. You will reserve an hour or whatever you need for time to try and get the word out. So
right. So one of I will thank you because we think this is really important, and in Hawaii, which is so dependent upon tourism and clean water, we think that we have an ethical responsibility to let people, both the tourists and the locals, know which waters are not clean and which waters are clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I should add here that what I've been talking about or focusing on are these streams and things that are badly polluted. But most of the places, almost all the places Department of Health samples, not coincidentally, are nice and clean. You don't have bacteria. All of the surf breaks that Surfrider samples out in the ocean, they're all clean. They're always clean. So if somebody were to ask me, we would say, yes, we have really, really clean waters here. And if, you know, come out and play and surf, it's great. But stay out of any of the streams or canals or the sources of stormwater runoff, of cesspool input, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And cesspools are one of the major contributors to this stream pollution. And but 2 weeks ago, the governor finally put a ban on cesspools because we are the last state in the nation, 50 years after the previous one, to finally recognize that water in cesspools does migrate and get into the streams, and it does migrate and get directly into the ocean, too. So we need to have that there. So that was a very positive step that the government has taken. But we need more help from the government.
Okay. Well, thank you. And anything else real quick? And would you like to hang around with us while we talk to Sylvia? She seemed to come up with a little cough.
They're drinking water with essential oils in it, so it's kind of clogging up.
What was that, Dr. Berg?
If anyone wants to call in to you, I'll stick on listening for a little bit.
Yeah, because Sylvia also, we were going to talk about the environmental concerns, and she has some good ideas and some concerns, and I thought, what a better way to do it. And now some of those probably thinking, why would you put a discussion about Enterococcus and all of that before you talk about a nice restaurant? Well, it's about healthy living, right? And so that's the way it is, and the good people will understand. But Sylvia,
Sylvia, and you realize we see in the newspaper from the mainland all the time where they have all the food recalls, especially of lettuces and things like that. And they're contaminated with animal waste or human waste. They're contaminated with E. coli, these bacteria that are associated with feces. And so the stream water here, it's not clean. They shouldn't be using it for agriculture, for example.
Correct.
But that's polluted. And so it's really important, both the drinking water, but also all our food, like what Sylvia served up. All of that has to be clean and healthy for us to live a clean environment.
Yeah, they don't go after the animal farmers. They go after the plants that get the runoff farmers.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Wait, someone's, hold on. Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comment or question. Hello? Well, someone wanted to ask you how can they get your recipes, or they left. But go ahead.
Oh, okay. Beautiful morning to you, Carol. Thank you for having me on your show. Wanted to give a plug for my restaurant before I forget. It's Greens and Vines. And it's a gourmet, raw, vegan restaurant. We're 100% gluten-free, non-GMO, plant-based, whole food, and we use as much as possible organic and locally grown veggies. And then just to give you a brief introduction to what got me started, it was a cure. We're looking for a cure for my husband's heart disease in 2004. January 1st, we became vegans after reading Dr. Dean Ornish's book, Reversing Heart Disease. And in 18 months after becoming vegans, he was able to reverse his heart disease and stop all his meds. So we started doing that because his doctor said, oh, you got to take those powerful drugs for the rest of your life. And we said, no, we're going to become vegans. And sure enough, it did work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started the restaurant after that, thinking that there's so many sick people because of the poor diets, the Western diet of meat and potatoes and stuff like that. So I wanted to get my gourmet-tasting vegan meals out there and started the restaurant. And now we're trying to spread our roots by revising our meal plans so we can get it into a fitness center near you. And we've got them in stackable individual serving containers. And you can go on to our website, www.greensandvines.com, by Tuesday night and pick them up on Fridays after 12 noon. Or mail in a check or come in and we'll swipe your credit card or take your cash. And then there's 6 meals per individual order. It's $88 a week. Or if you'll be a regular, you can go for our new 4-week pack at $265 for the 4 weeks worth of meals. It's it brings the meal cost down from $14.66 to $11.04 each.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, too, before I forget, we're not just salads. A lot of people think we're just salads.
I was one of those people.
But we have gourmet-tasting meals like lasagna, not tuna, Middle Eastern tacos, cauliflower buffalo wings with cashew dill ranch, cremini mushroom escargot.
Let me read a couple of these recipes, and you might, people think, how do you get this done? And I think it's really good. Seventh Heaven Soup, Asian slaw, flax thin, sesame, cucumber, red pepper, tomatoes, and cilantro. So if I didn't know any better before visiting your restaurant, I would have gone in thinking I would just get a salad. But these are actual meals that have been prepared in a way that you'll enjoy. And there's basil, tomato, olive, spaghetti, tatsoi salad, arugula, tomato, olive salad, pumpkin seed. Is that what you had, Dr. Berg?
No, I had the kale salad, which is wonderful.
The kale salad. In comparison to other salads, what do you think?
I love it. They make their own homemade dressing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So fresh. It was just great. That's something that I order quite often when I'm at lunch because I want something light and healthy. So it matched right up there with the best that I get here on Kauai.
Here's one: avocado celery sushi, namasu, sunflower seed rice, tahini, lemon, lime juice, carrots, red green onions, and cilantro. Now, I'm interested in this because I know a lot of my friends have health problems over the years from bad diet or just they just got ill for whatever reason, and they're trying to recover. And everybody now, most of the doctors are saying it's consumption, diet, which what your intake dictates how well you are.
Correct. You know, it's diet and exercise. What we learned is that the vegan meals that don't have animal products, it's very healthy for you, especially whole food, plant-based. So I don't do any juicing. I don't believe in juices because I think we really need our fiber in our body. And so many people are obese, and yet they think, oh, I'm going to juice. I'm on a juice cleanse or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you really need the fibers. You use less calories. You get less calories in an orange, and you get full from eating one full orange than having to consume the juice, which probably takes like two or three oranges.
Because the actual orange has fiber and
right.
then the flesh and you're not just eating or drinking the juice.
Right, and then, you know, if you're just drinking the juice, it's sugar going straight down to your liver, bypasses your
mm-hmm. So in making some of these dishes, and we're going to weave into the environmental concerns that you talked about earlier, and making these, where do you start from? How do you get these ideas? I first of all, go to www.e-liciousdishes.com or go to greensandvines.com and look at that brochure. And let me tell you, folks, this is, it's not a joke. It's good food. It's I can't do it justice, to be honest with you. And when I sat there watching other people come in and order, and what I thought was actual the cooked dish, and that's the other thing. You're not cooking them, are you?
Correct. We're not cooking it because we're a living food, meaning that all the enzymes from the in the proteins and the from the plant enter your body and help your digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you don't use the enzymes in your body that's meant for maintenance to digest the food. And by eating plants, which your digestive system gets a break because it gets digested pretty quick. like, you know, somewhere like the fruits in a few minutes, all the way up to maybe 2 hours at the most.
Well, Dr. Berg, you got any comment?
Nope.
I don't want to convey or portray this as a rabbit food being served on a platter. This is actual good food, and if I may ask you to just describe, I wanted to try and describe it, the living lasagna that you made. I would like my listeners to see, it's uncooked, no heat involved, but it's absolutely out of this world. The flavors, and what is that made of? How do you make it?
Well, that's our number one dish, you know, Carol. I'm glad you're talking about our number one dish. It's 12 layers of love. It includes our pasta is actually zucchini sliced and tossed with a little bit of fresh thyme and a splash of extra virgin olive oil. And then so we use that to layer instead of pasta, make the pasta, which is only flour and water. Mm-hmm. And then we have
extra virgin olive
oil. You're throwing me off, though. We have our marinara sauce made with some sun-dried tomatoes, our basil pesto. We have the macadamia nut or cashew ricotta. And we actually have a layer of spinach. And we use whole sliced thin tomatoes as our other layer.
And you had a pesto in there, did you?
Yeah, the pesto.
Yeah, I remember that. That was and that was just straight pine nuts and or I don't know.
No, we use macadamia nuts grown locally on the Big Island. And you know, a lot of people say, "Well, don't you find people trying to you know, say, oh, are you trying to make it taste like meat?" And I said, no, meat, you never see people flavoring your food with meat. That's blood.
Right.
You know? So it's always going to be vegetables and spices, and that's mm-hmm. the whole food plants. So that's why we're able to make our escargots out of cremini mushrooms, because we know how it's supposed to taste. It's got mm-hmm. a lot of that garlic butter, and I make my own garlic butter out of macadamia nuts.
Mm-hmm. I think most people struggle with not bothering or taking an interest in raw foods or vegan food or vegetarian because they think it's a great task and all, and it's kind of a strange rabbit food. But in reality, the way you prepared it and serving it up. And by the way, this place is at Ward and Kapi'olani. What is the building, that building?
It's called 909 Kapi'olani. That's 909. The address as mm-hmm. well.
And don't be deceived now. When you go there, you look first. You won't see any parking. But they have more than sufficient parking in the back. You can go inside the building.
On the ground floor.
On the ground floor. And, folks, I'm telling you, this food, I'm suggesting it because I know many of my friends that I've met and as I travel, either have diabetes or have digestive problems or even skin issues that they say or the doctors have prescribed a certain laying off certain foods. And I believe, now, I'm not trying to pitch your place for the sake of making money because it's about there are people that can really benefit from having a plant-based diet. And this is where you can have fine dining. Here's one, baby romaine Caesar salad, cauliflower buffalo wings. Quote, how do you make buffalo wings out of no meat?
Oh, well, we use some of our ketchup, which is made out of some dried tomatoes and raisins. Mm-hmm. And then we spiced it up. We added in the flavors of buffalo wings, which is smoky paprika, oregano. I also serve celery, seed. Oh, gosh. There's so many things that we messed around with, cayenne.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking, speaking of cayenne, I said grainless tabbouleh, no bean sesame, hummus, flax thins, and cucumber, jalapeno relish, and avocado. Now, that's for the brothers that really want to take on some hot stuff. But you cayenne pepper, too, in your recipes.
Yeah, you know, those things are good for your blood flow. So, but we don't use a whole lot, you know. But the whole idea is to make it really gourmet tasting. I myself was have been a foodie for quite a while. And when we had to become vegans, I was thinking, oh, no, what are we going to do?
So and this is where you developed this interest as what occurred with your husband's health.
Right.
This triggered your interest, and then you from there went into the business and then opened the restaurant. Is that
I got pretty good from the very beginning because there weren't that many vegan recipe books to convert vegetarian to vegan first, and then from vegan to uncooked mm-hmm. vegan. And it was a challenge, but in the process, I guess I got pretty good at messing around with ingredients. So,
you know, I wanted to ask you some of the basic vegetables that we find in the daily diet of local people. I use the term loosely, local people. Let's say bok choy, wonbok, or there's a lot of squash. You, as a chef, and have experiences. What kind of suggestions or eggplant that a person at home can do right now to make it more palatable rather than just stir-frying them with pork and over rice and whatever? How can a person sitting at home with concerns for health issues or want to eat right incorporate eggplant, wonbok, or the local vegetables without difficulty?
We use vegetable fruits, nuts, and seeds. That's mm-hmm. all we use. We don't use any grains and stuff like that. So we're familiar with, you know, tying one hand in the back of ours while we're making our meals. But what you can do is to get, like, different tools that out, like a vegetable peeler, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You can use that with your zucchini to make noodles, fettuccine, go all the way up to the seed bed, because the seed bed is too wet, so it's going to take away a lot of the flavor.
This is the eggplant?
No, the zucchini.
The zucchini,
okay. We don't use eggplant, because eggplant normally needs to be cooked.
Okay.
And also it's one of those nightshades that a lot of people are allergic to.
Solanum family?
A lot of the ones with seeds.
Tomato, nightshades.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But tomatoes, of course, we can't stay away from.
So the eggplant is out because of the need to cook it.
Yeah.
Your restaurant, you don't use eggplant?
No.
What other locals that you don't use in or any others?
I know there's quite a few.
Well, as we go on, but
yeah.
but anyway.
Oh yeah, beans. We don't use beans. I tried sprouting chickpeas to make my hummus,
mm-hmm.
and I was successful in using it. However, I noticed, oh my gosh, in order to take away the that real sandy, or I forget what the word. Anyway,
sclerotic.
That I had to add so much oil to make it smooth that it didn't make it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for your health to mm-hmm. eat that much oil.
Dr. Berg, you being a vegetarian, a vegan, what do you do with some of the tips you have on and at home when you're cooking for yourself?
I'm a vegetarian. I'm not a vegan. And you know what I do? I have my own garden in my yard. I've had one all my adult life because I always want to know what I'm eating.
Mm-hmm.
And also what I find in Hawaii is that you can get fresh food all the time. So between my own garden and whatever is at the local farmer's market, I'm able to eat, and my diet is dependent upon what's really available and ripe at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Eggplant is one of my favorites in lots of different ways, both from raw baba ganoush kind of paste to baked stuff. But I am not a gourmet cook. I am nothing
No, we're green in ways.
I just wanted to get back to your question regarding, you know, what other, you know, like taking bok choy or you know, some of the common foods that, you know, people grow or can find at farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is we marinate, you know, we chop,
mm-hmm.
we dehydrate, and sometimes we even massage some of the stuff like the kale.
Yeah.
But I found that you don't even need to massage it if you marinate it, or you just
mm-hmm.
toss it in like sesame oil, or you know, look at the vinegars. There's different kinds of vinegars. So we use always the best. Like it'll be the one with the mother in it. You know, it would be like Bragg's makes one. In fact, I have an old bottle of Bragg's that was above my my microwave, and when I opened it up, I freaked out because there was this huge mother in that thing.
The Bragg's amino acids.
Yeah, you know, when I was trying to clean up the clutter, I'm like, ew, you know, look at this big mother. So it shows that it's really a living thing, you
mm-hmm.
know, in that bottle. So it's good to not get stuff that's, like, super processed.
Mm-hmm. And so Bragg's amino acids is what you use.
Bragg's apple cider vinegar. I use a wheat feed tamari from Osawa, which is fermented in cedar casks. And it's so expensive. It's almost like buying a bottle of wine.
Really?
Close to $30.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of wine, I noticed you're in the Honolulu magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that, because there's a Charlemagne.
Oh yeah.
And I caught on to the anything near drink.
Charlemagne. Yeah, it's drinking really good.
And what issue is this Honolulu magazine?
Oh, that one's the latest one. It's says grading the public schools. It's April one, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be April. It's covered over, and yeah, it has the faces of Hawaii, so I have a little article about my spreading the roots of our meal plans. So that's my next big thing, to get it around Oahu.
Mm-hmm.
And if that works, then I'll jump over to Kauai.
Yeah, and I'm sure Dr. Berg and everybody else will be happy.
Yeah.
But going back a bit, where are you from originally? You're local?
Yeah, I'm locally born and raised here.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just traveled a lot with my husband. We went to France, to the wine country in Paris, and then for several years. And quite a bit in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I just came back from Amsterdam too. The food is just fantastic there.
And are you finding they're quite active in green foods and raw foods or vegan?
I was surprised that, you know, like there were quite a few options for vegans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the fine dining restaurants and the old country foods are so good. You know, the
now, are you vegetarian yourself personally, or do you...
No, I'm vegan.
You're vegan.
Yeah.
So when you say visiting the old world in the old dishes, do you stay away from meats, or you
I
fine?
I don't eat any animal... I try to stay away from animal products, but the only thing that when I was in Amsterdam, I took the liberty of just eating whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but not... the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
It did have dairy or butter and stuff like that. So I find that, you know, when I taste it that way, I know how it's supposed to taste.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to... in fact, I just had a Japanese national come to my restaurant, and he was showing how to make soba noodles.
Mm.
And so he had made a vegan sauce for the soup. And so I was like really happy and, you know, tasting it and stuff like that. And he said, okay, I have this other one. This is the regular one. So I said, oh, yeah, I'll taste it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I tasted it, as well as this intern from Japan who's been working with me, both of us said, we can use smoky paprika. You know,
smoky paprika?
Yeah, to make it a vegan, you know, style soba sauce. Because if I didn't taste it, I wouldn't have known that it's supposed to have that smoky flavor. And I guess that smoky flavor comes from the bonito flakes, fish flakes.
The fish flakes, the bonito.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see green on your brochure. It's green vines and green and vines. Diabetes, heart disease, cancer, strokes, dementia, depression, and climate change are foodborne diseases. And we take our health and Mother Nature seriously. Health and Mother Nature seriously. Let's take back our biological and environmental destiny by from big food and big medicine. Let me ask the two of you: what about GMO papaya? Now, you don't use fruit in yours. Do you use papaya in yours? And what's your opinion about the basic GMO papaya, not the glyphosate and the Roundup issue, but the GMO papaya? Can you guys share with us what you guys think about that?
I think that it's a frankenfood. You know, I'm staying away from. We don't even know what's in it, and there's never been any testing imposed on those GMO companies to see whether or not it's good for you.
Even the papaya.
Yeah. Okay. They came about through our University of Hawaii Tropical Ag. They're the ones that are doing all that testing and making GMOs and stuff.
Dr. Berg?
No comment.
So that's the thing about all that money that they're raising the tuition for our, you know, our kids, and that's going to those kind of studies for the private industries. I don't think I'm for that. You know, that's another issue. But anyway, but the whole point is that I do use the kahuku papayas that you can find at the Kaka'ako Farmers Market.
That's non-GMO?
Yeah, that's the only non-GMO because they had their farm way before Monsanto came about.
I think one of the things that people should know is that there's a lot of non-GMO papaya around here that the university put out, that the whole papaya industry would be destroyed unless they made, you know, the GMO stuff. And that was patently false, and that we do have a lot of natural papaya that's still growing. And on our island and all over, you can find it. You don't have to get the GMO stuff if you don't want to. I'd like to just add one little thing, and then I'm going to go, is that part of Surfrider's effort is education. And so we've been supporting a lot of different student projects, from high school science fair projects up to college students looking at pesticides in groundwater, plastics in bird guts, and things like that. I bring this up because of right now, this coming Monday, there's the science fair, statewide science fair on Oahu. And we're very proud to have a young lady from Kapa'a High School who did a study of glyphosate, which is from Roundup, in honey taken directly from the hives. And this way, there was no glyphosate introduced by the bottling company or anything like that. It was taken by the beekeeper right from the hive. And approximately one-third of our local honey had measurable amounts of Roundup in it. And some of these were people who were didn't want it in there. They may have been organic, claimed to have been organic or not, but they were trying to live a healthy lifestyle away from that area. Some of our one group, organic farmers, which is far away from all of the seed crops and coffee and everything, and we didn't find any in that area. But the big part of the study was looking at the concentrations with respect to land use. And there's a strong correlation with the closer you are to large-scale monocrop agriculture, the higher the concentration of glyphosate in the honey. A follow-up study is being done. It's underway, looking at what you buy in the stores, and whether it's the health food store or the Costco or wherever, you have to be really, really careful because you don't know where that's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a study was done in Philadelphia where they found, they just went to the stores in Philadelphia and they found a third of the honey, including the organic honey, had this Roundup glyphosate in it.
Yeah, I know you say you had to go. I was trying to figure out how I could get you to mention that or if it was appropriate because you shared it with us at the restaurant.
Right. And I recommend, and really support students going into science, citizen-based science. Again, getting kids to do projects that have some societal relevance. And we're very pleased when she approached us, and we supported by paying for the analytical laboratory, the expensive tests, but we wanted to make sure it was done right. So, and so she was presenting. She won third place on the island of Kauai, and so she got to go to the statewide one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important for Sylvia and everybody to know that we have to be careful of what we're eating.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much environmental contamination, whether it's in our streams and rivers and oceans or in our crops that we eat, because the stuff is everywhere. It's everywhere and it's being sprayed everywhere, and nobody is going out there and actually testing for us and telling us that it is safe.
Right.
So the few I've kept all of the beekeepers' identities secret, confidential. They know which ones had glyphosate.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that we found none, you know, I said, yeah, you can tell people that it was tested and that batch did not have any in it. And then later on, we found that there was this whole cluster, this organic farmer group.
We're coming down to the last couple of seconds. Can you hold on another 5 minutes or call back in about 5 minutes?
Okay.
All right. Please do. Thank you. Dr. Carl Berg with Surfrider Foundation, and I'm here with Sylvia Thompson, owner of Greens and Vines, a restaurant, gourmet vegan, gluten-free, non-GMO restaurant right here at Ward Avenue in Capulana. We'll be right back. This is the Carol Cox Show. Thank you for joining.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me right here at KWAI 1080 AM from 9 o'clock to 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings. You can also catch us on podcasts at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. You can also share your news tips with us at carolcox.com.
it's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half on Sunday morning here. Happy Easter to all of you folks out there that believe in the bunny that lays the egg and all of the other good things about it. And I always joke, I remember when my mother used to take baby oil and grease us up and give us a new pair of shoes and a new pair of pants, and we were off to church Easter morning, you know. So I don't know if things have changed, and finding Easter eggs that the rabbits laid. So I still hadn't figured that one out, but one day I think when I get older I'll probably learn where eggs come from. But anyway, my guest is Dr. Carl Berg from the Surfrider Foundation, and they have a press release out regarding water, and I'll have him to share that again with us. And also Miss Thompson here, Sylvia Thompson of the Greens and Vines restaurant, a raw vegan gourmet restaurant, and absolutely fantastic. I've been there, and it's right at Ward and Kapi'olani here in Honolulu. So, Dr. Berg, thank you, and tell us again a little bit about the press release, as well as we were talking about the honey, and I really appreciate you sharing that with us, or anything else. And then Sylvia was talking about sustainability and foods, and then she mentioned the sustainable meats, which knocked her off her rockers. But but anyway, go ahead, Dr. Berg, if you would.
So I'd like to just briefly repeat that the Surfrider Foundation is starting a nationwide campaign to have the government to look more closely at our Blue Water Task Force water quality testing, and to then be preemptive and proactive and put up warning signs, actual signs on the beaches, where the tests that we do and what also the Department of Health does in stating that these waters may be polluted, may pose a public health risk, and that you should keep out of them. We do have signs at the Alawai, and also on the Hanalei River, and now Ka'aluhu Lagoon area. But other than that, really, there's very few places, no other places, that the Department of Health has put up warning signs. And so we think, in light of what happened in Flint, Michigan, where the government has been terribly negligent in responding to the public's complaints and the serious health effects, that this is the time to call on the governments to be more open and more mindful that they need to warn the public about our streams and ditches and canals are getting the stormwater runoff, and they're probably very, very polluted, especially from cesspools, which the governor has just banned.
Mm-hmm.
This is not to say that our beaches are yucky. Both the Surfrider and the Department of Health test beaches, and most of the ocean hunting beaches are beautifully clean. There's never any fecal indicating bacteria in it, unless maybe from a monk seal or something.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the beaches are clean, but the streams and canals and rivers are really pretty foul, and they deserve to be posted as such.
I don't believe that many people can appreciate what the Surfrider Foundation has really done, not just in this instance, but earlier in just the waters off Honolulu. There, we're still in a consent decree based on lawsuits or legal actions that Surfrider took regarding water. Is that correct?
Yeah. And so Surfrider is really concerned about the oceans and the waves and the beaches. We're trying to protect those for all users. And here in Hawaii, the Kauai chapter at least, when we talk about all users, we're talking about people, but we're also talking about our friendly dolphins and whales and turtles and monk seals that are right there up on the beaches with us. And so we're concerned about all the sewage that's getting into the waters. We're concerned about pesticides getting into the waters. We're really concerned about the nets and garbage that's floating in the water. Yesterday on Kauai, Surfrider had a big beach cleanup at Hanama'ulu Beach Park with a couple other groups, BRAD, one of them, and we picked up 1,718 pounds of garbage. And I think about 800 of that were nets that could entangle the turtles and the whales and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not just concerned about the pest, the bacteria levels, but mm-hmm. we're also worried about the chemicals like pesticides in the water. We're worried about all the plastics in the water. We supported a student who looked at plastics in the guts of the shearwaters that are here on Kauai, the newels, but also the wedge tail. And that work showed that over the past 40 years, 40 years ago when they looked at that, there was no plastics in the bird guts, and now 50% of the birds have plastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A big change.
Well, I had to seize this opportunity for you and Sylvia Thompson here for Greens and Vines, because after we ate at the restaurant, we spoke with Sylvia. She wasn't trying to tell us about a restaurant. She was telling us about her concerns about the environment, and I thought, wow, how great is that? Here's a person not trying to increase patronage or customers. She's first thing out of her mouth, a restaurant owner, worried about the environment. So not just eating healthy. And then when you guys engage, so those of you out there thinking that this is a commercial, no, this is not really not that at all. It's where one day something really good happened, and more restaurateurs should think in these terms. But Sylvia, you immediately focus on the sustainable meats, and then there's an issue over on Kauai, for example, that you're familiar with, as we all are. We've talked about it here, the dairy being Hawaii Dairy is proposing. What's your opinion on that? And you'd mentioned someone sent you an email regarding dairy.
Yeah,
food.
I've been against the dairy farm because it's in the beautiful Hanalei, right next to the river, and just the pollution, but even more so with the drought coming, we need the water, not the cows. The cows take, like, especially if they're grass-fed, 22,000 gallons per cow per year. And because it takes 8 more years for grass-fed cows to be large enough to slaughter. And, it's not really, and all the methane and the nitrous oxide releases so much global warming potential that is not even spoken about mm-hmm. by most environmental groups. And the thing that really got me sparked up was in 2014, everybody was claiming, oh, we're so sustainable, we're getting all our meat from the local guys, so, you know, there's no, they don't have to fly it in, or they don't have, you know, it's like within 100 feet, or whether, I forget what, 100 miles mm-hmm. or something. And that's not even sustainable, because, like, one cow emits so much CO2 with the methane, and, methane alone, 78 times the amount of CO2 as it's, if it was converted to CO2, and 280 times more CO2 as CO2 than the cars.
An automobile, a regular one.
Yeah.
But, Dr. Berg, you've also been testing the streams over there regarding and expressing concerns with the, as others have, regarding the proposed dairy site.
Yeah, we have. So when we first heard about the dairy over 2 years ago, our immediate concern was, with all that many cows, there's going to be a lot of urine, a lot of manure, and how are they going to keep it getting into the water? And the Hawaii Dairy Farm said that there would be no release, no net release. Oh, that sounds really nice, but that's totally impossible. And what they meant at that point was that there would be no runoff into the stream. So they did not talk about all of the methane and ammonia that was going to go up into the air, and they specifically didn't talk about all of the methane and not methane, but the ammonia, urine, and nitrates and phosphates that would seep down into the ground and then show up in the stream water, the groundwater, and our drinking water. They just ignored that in making their wonderful comment. It was sustainable. It was no net release. And so once we heard this, we said we better start getting some samples of that stream before any cows get in there so we can have a baseline to show that, in fact, that they are polluting. And when we went out, we were just shocked that the water was already so heavily polluted with nitrates and phosphates and turbidity and bacteria from the existing agriculture that was going on in that area and perhaps the sewage waste disposal site that was in the area and other things. So that's how we got involved with the dairy farm, was looking at the ocean stream connection. And we're then saying that before they put any dairy farm in there, that stream has to be clean, and they have to make sure that they do not pollute it. And that's where we immediately ran into problems, both with the Department of Health testing and also with the dairy farm not wanting to get pollution discharge permits and things like that.
There's
in a broader sense, it is not sustainable because they are going to be flying in GMO food from the mainland. They're going to be shipping the cows in. They're going to be moving the milk back and forth from here over to Oahu. And then the water usage, they were talking 3 million gallons a day for feeding, giving it to the cattle, but also washing down and for growing the crops and grass that they're going to be doing. And 3 million a day is outrageous. And they don't own that water. That water is being stolen from another APWA. And so other groups are saying, no, you can't have that water. We need it for our taro farming. We need it for agriculture. And so it's a bigger problem. But I'd like to just finish up here in saying that when we started doing the testing at the dairy farm at Wild PV Stream, our intent was not targeting the dairy farm. It was just to set background levels and see how this nice stream in the middle of nowhere compares to the rest of the streams we have in the state. And we thought it would be clean. And, in fact, we found the bacteria count at time was greater than 25,000 when it should be 35. And for 2 years now, we've been sampling it every month, sometimes more often. And it consistently has an average count around 10,000.
I think the issue about cows, in my opinion, it's not just the runoff or the pollution. It's basically our oceans are dying from the animal usage and using animals for food. And the phytoplankton is migrating elsewhere. It's getting too hot in our oceans. And that's the basic food for the fish. So we should look at the effects of...
It's all tied together with climate change.
And you know...
So we just try to, all of us individually, Sylvia, you and Carol, myself, each of us needs to work on this problem of climate change and pollution in those areas where we seem to be most effective. And my PhD and my research over the past 45 years has been in ocean-related aspects. And so that's why now that I'm doing volunteer work with Surfrider, we're looking at specifically at the problems of land-based pollutants getting into the streams and ocean, but mainly getting into the ocean and affecting not only the people that are there, but also the whole ecosystem.
You know, one of the things I wanted to share with everyone, and we've had them on the show, Friends of Maha Ulepu. And you met Bridget Hammerquist and Eileen Kishlan Loin from Kauai, and Dr. Berger is working with him. And a formidable force, man. If I was Hawaii Dairy Farms, I would roll up my show and leave town, because they're not going. You guys are some of the warriors, the new warriors of the world. I mean, I can't believe that they are still on insisting on putting that dairy there, knowing that every move they make, every breath they take, Friends of Maha Ulepu and Surf Rider Foundation and the other people in that community are watching. I don't think there's a better watched, scrutinized environmental concern that I can recall. Do you, Dr. Berg?
No, and I think the reason for it is the results of putting a dairy farm of that size and that type in that area will be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to destroy the drinking water wells. It's going to destroy the stream life. It's probably going to destroy the coral reef areas. And it's just catastrophic. And so Surf Rider Foundation, which is totally independent from Friends of Mahalo Lapu, but we are looking at the water problem, stream and ocean problem. And Friends of Mahalo Lapu sees that that's a case where we have actual numbers, data to show in court to show how badly it is polluted. And so that's our work, very close work with them. And it's our point is that as Surf Rider Foundation, whose mission is to protect our oceans and waves and beaches, is that that dairy farm is in the worst possible case we can imagine on the island of Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
So that if they really want to have a dairy farm because they really feel that the people need milk protein, then there's plenty of places toward the center of the island that it could be put where it would not affect human settlement, would not affect the streams and the ocean, and that would be fine. And people who are against the use of cows, against meat eating and other things, they can go at them with that. But Surf Rider, our mission really is to protect the oceans, the waves, and the beaches.
Right.
You don't put a cattle farm right on the beach. It's stupid, it's catastrophic, and we have dug our heels in saying no matter what the politicians say what the big money people say, that this is just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, Carol, let me leave you with that.
Okay.
I'll go on with the rest of things for the day.
I really appreciate you joining us, and thank you for calling in.
Right, and anybody wants more information, they can go to kauai.surfrider.org.
All righty, Dr. Carl Berg, thank you. Thank you so much. Aloha.
Well, I beg to differ. I don't think that putting the cows up in landlocked areas going to make much of a difference. It's just our waters our oceans are dying.
Yeah.
And it's not because of pollution. It's because of the methane and the heating of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And to have them say, oh, it'd be fine, you know, to put them somewhere else. No, I don't believe that. And there's a a book called Food Choice and Sustainability, and the author is Richard Openlander. You can find him on YouTube, and he's coming down on April 12th and being brought down by the Vegetarian Society of Hawaii, April 12th, Tuesday, at 7 p.m. at the Alawai Golf Course. It's free admission and refreshments. This guy is super key to.
What's his name again?
Dr. Richard Openlander. Mm-hmm. O P P E N Lander.
Openlander.
Yeah, okay. Openlander. Mm-hmm. And it would be really great for you to check out his. He has a YouTube, and you can find it on John McDougall's videos on his website. He's an awesome speaker.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets out really key points about the necessity for people to see that, you know, what you're eating today, if you're a meat eater, you are not an environmentalist.
But what's the educational process? I, on many occasions, I hear people that are knowledgeable, or I would say not experts, but have a basic understanding and concern for. They speak as if someone should just stop eating, you know, their behavior of eating meat overnight, and because the vegetarian says so. Is that process a little too asking too much too soon, too early of a person who needs to be educated, or and what's the process of educating people? Is
a lot of people think that, you know, they need the protein, and you know, people have been brainwashed by the meat and dairy industry for years. Remember, there were the food groups, you know. It was like meat, and then there's the breads and the you know, vegetables. And then there was, like, what is that, food pyramid or something? And just lately, even Michelle Obama's My Plate, it still had a glass of milk there. You don't need a glass of milk. You need water. Water is second only to air as the most precious element in the world. And we're sending satellites over to Mars looking for water.
Right.
Why don't we keep the one that's here?
You know, air, we can, matter of minutes, we're dead. Water, matter of days. So they're critical in our existence. But this, when GMOs, I'm back to that again. For example, the cows and all, and I hadn't had a chance to read up on it. Or when a cow ingests, they're going to import feed that is GMO, I'm told. If that's true, then when a cow consumes that and ingests it and breaks it down, are the elements of that GMO still present?
Absolutely. It's going to get passed down for generations.
And
you know,
so
it's going to, you're now a new host for the GMO.
Are they going to be passed back into the environment? That was always good. And I read a little bit, but, you know, I'm busy
you know?
Looking at it. And if anybody out there have any explanation or insight or understanding, I'd really
now they have like salmon. They have GMO salmon, and it doesn't have to be labeled. You can be eating that stuff, you know, wherever. And it's important that we ask for GMO to be labeled. But I think even more so, you know, than just focusing on GMO, I think our environment, Mother Earth, you know, we have to really be concerned, because we are killing our earth.
One thing that has not really changed much over the years, we all understand. I remember in the earlier days back in the 70s about the environment, the debate was, well, it takes so many pounds of grain or bushels of grain to raise a pound of beef.
Exactly.
And then we talk about the water. Nothing has changed. So no one has dispelled that. The concern is, why are we still, and is it the manipulation? Is it, for example, your restaurant? If a person went into your restaurant, Greens and Vines, right now, I know for a fact I was there, they'll come out satisfied, full, and probably took 3 inches away back from the grave rather than getting closer to illnesses or whatever. Veggies just don't hurt you. Doesn't seem, unless you have an allergic reaction or eat too many of them in one setting. But in your food, you say that it's 100% gourmet vegan, gluten-free, non-GMO, unprocessed, real food, raw, organic, locally grown as much as possible. And your restaurant hours, we've been talking about the restaurant, Greens and Vines. When is it open, and what days are you closed?
Right, we're open from Monday through Saturday from 11 to 2 and 5 to 9, closed on Sundays. We have happy hour night, happy hour between 5 and 7 p.m., and we have a lot of wines and wines, sakes, and beers.
Well, I would say that probably a misnomer, happy hour. If you go there and eat, every hour is going to be happy.
Yeah, because we have the most wines by the glass.
Yeah.
So you can get real happy.
And I don't like tiramisu, but that one you made, I just kind of shy away from it, but you made one, and if you could share us, what was it made of from?
Actually, we have a Japanese intern named Liko, who...
Liko?
Yeah,
a Japanese intern.
R-I-K-O.
Okay, Riko.
Yeah,
okay.
So she pronounced her name Liko, so I call her Liko. But she came up with this idea of the tiramisu and using the cashews and coconut.
Fresh coconut, baby coconut meat.
Yeah.
That was really good.
And then I said, it needs a little bit more coffee. So then we put it, we made espresso.
Mm-hmm. And sample and buy at farmers markets, KCC, Kaka'ako, Kailua, and Queens Medical Center.
Right, right.
You were there on weekdays or?
Wednesdays, the first Wednesdays were at the Queens, right in that courtyard area. That's from 9 to 1. And then on Thursdays, we're at the Kailua Farmers Market next to the Whole Foods, mm-hmm. New Whole Foods in the garage area.
Now, in your brochure, it shows a dragon fruit, and mm-hmm. I've become a fan of dragon fruit. How do you use the dragon fruit, and you've incorporated it in your dishes? Which one of the special dishes do you make?
Well, we use a lot of fruits for our cheesecake, quote-unquote, because... I usually make about three different layers in my cheesecakes, like red. I found out from going to classes at a seminar that the colors or the color pigments of the plants and the vegetables and fruits are filled with the antioxidants, and so you don't want to. That's why you don't want to cook it either, because that's when it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to like vary all the different colors because it represents different antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is for the blood.
Right. Caller, good morning. Thank you for calling. You got a comment or question?
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
See, we're talking about food here, or at least different types of food. I was just curious about whether you guys have talked, I guess, a bit about the whole organic aspect as opposed to HMO.
Organic versus GMO?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so as a farmer's market vendor, I do a lot of shopping at the farmer's markets while I'm there for our restaurant, and then have asked, you know, people, you know, where they get their seeds and that sort of stuff, just to make sure, you know, like if it's organic or genetically modified.
And what is your restaurant, if you don't mind asking?
It's called Greens and Vines. It's
yeah, I've heard of it. That's near across from the Bleed, though, right?
Mm-hmm. And what we can't get...
Right. Yeah, I have walked by it on my way home. I'm curious about, is there a price differential, like, for restaurants that want to, like, make sure they get, like, organic food? Like, you're was it vegan or vegetarian restaurant?
Vegan.
Vegan, right. Is there a price differential? I always meant to ask. Is there a price differential in regards to buying organic as opposed to buying stuff that could vaguely be described as GMO or possibly GMO?
Well, there's going to be mass production. Usually GMO stuff is mass produced, so it's going to be cheaper.
Right.
And, you know, because they're so ruthless, they're probably using manpower that's not that
ruthless.
But anyway, I don't want to get
Well, let me chime in here.
I like that term, ruthless.
Well, I was impressed because your prices are not steep. And I can tell you, I've gone to two restaurants here, and I'm shocked. I went to Chinese food the other night just for two people. It was $50-some, and I swear to you, It didn't taste that good. It was oily and greasy, and the prices, but...
$50 for two people, that's $25 per person, right?
Right. It was a little more than that, and I mean, let me tell you, if I'm not going to name the restaurant or anything, but I will never go back there again. And when I left your restaurant, I felt like I'd done myself a favor health-wise. When I left their restaurant, I thought I'd made the biggest mistake in my life because it was greasy and, you know, and I have concerns of health and what have you. And it just leaves a, for better, lack of a better word, a bad taste in your mouth.
Actually, you know, our check average is about 25, and that's with multiple dishes per person.
I can. You go to any fast food restaurant now, they jack you up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, it depends on what where you go.
Well, but let me say this. Here's what I have observed, a commonality. Many of them have white rice. And if you dare to ask for brown rice, that's an insult to them. What do you mean, brown rice? This isn't good enough? It's that kind of attitude. And I'm getting older, and I'm trying to readjust myself as a daily, right? But I wouldn't, and besides, it's worth the experience. It's fine dining in the upper echelon of salads.
But let me, when you're talking about rice, I don't take anything out of a crinkly bag. Everything is made by these hands. We don't use any grains, so we have to make everything out of vegetable, fruits, nuts, and seeds, and that's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing that I wanted to bring out is this. I mean, that the whole price differential for restaurants, I mean, that's a whole other discussion we can get into. But the thing, the reason why I brought up the whole idea of price is that I'm not a vegan, I'm not a vegetarian. I was kind of a half vegetarian once. But what I found was when I went to places like Kukua Market and Down to Earth, that if you're trying to get, like, healthier types of foods, healthier types of drinks and so forth, it's going to cost you a little bit more than if you get it at other kinds of markets and so forth. And the one thing that one of the reasons that I don't probably eat purely healthy, unlike some people that I know, is the price differential. You know, unfortunately, the way that the markets are structured is that it's structured in a way to provide people with cheaper ways of eating what's not good for them, as opposed to making more and making what's healthier for you, what's good for you, a lot more, a lot costlier.
Well, I always tell people you pay on the front end with your mouth, or on the back end, you know, on your
with your health.
When you're poor health, you're going to get shot.
You have to look at the way markets are structured, and you have to look at the economic cost. It's fine, you know, what I hear from people sometimes, it's like, well, you know, if you want to invest in it or if you want to do it, you'll just pay the price. You can't say that to people who, you know, are impacted by economic inequality and are impacted by economic costs just like anybody else in the state, you know. It's kind of easy to tell people who don't have the money that they should eat healthy.
Well, okay, now you can eat healthy and it's going to be super cheap. My meal plans, if you buy for 4 weeks, it's $11.04 per meal.
But, you know, I think it's a bit of misinformation that has been spread out, because who's to say, or it just depends on the ethics of a person that, quote, is growing or providing organics. I know that number of health, quote, health restaurants or health food stores will charge extra just because it's in that climate of health food. You understand? So I believe, unless there's a real honest review of it, I believe some of this health food cost is exacerbated, or I wouldn't say exacerbated.
It's boosted. What is it?
Yeah, because of who the audience you have, and
yeah.
I don't know if it's. I've seen some of the issues where or prices of bananas. You walk in and you look and you see the bananas and they're double the price. Did it cost that vendor that much?
No, I doubt.
Or did they have an audience that they figure person that is able to eat and can afford that extra, and it's part of the atmosphere, right?
You know, one thing that came to mind when you're talking about the difference about in pricing, a lot of the big food companies have taken over the small mom and pop groceries, you know, like Celestial, other organic brands have been bought out by Heinz and Whole Foods and all these big food companies, And that's because they know that they can jack up the price. And mm-hmm. then what they do, too, is alter it. It says they're now on the board that can say what can be considered organic, even if it's, you know, they added in, like, carrageenan, which is, like, that sort of stuff.
I actually went out to people and I said, you know, the same, some of the same companies that will talk about, that will produce essentially GMO foods are the same ones that own some of these organic
exactly.
companies. So it's the same thing. It's a matter of dominating the market. That's what it's about.
Well, a lot of people are trying to go healthy, and that's why they're doing this.
Right. You know, they see a market
monopolizing
to make money, and that's what they're doing. They're trying to make money. You know, it's perfectly logical. It's logical. It's not right, but it's logical on their part.
You take, for example, the loss of ag land here, and people say, well, there's no loss. We're squandering our agricultural land. And imagine, would that dictate the price if there were more accessible land for, let's just say, a person that want to grow leafy vegetables, such as kale, arugula, or whatever. Try to rent a piece of land now. Driven up.
Yeah.
So
well, that's the thing. That's another thing about Hawaii. You know, when I was living in Seattle and I was writing for publications in Seattle, I went to some presentation, I guess, at the Port of Seattle. It's all these agricultural producers, farmers, and so forth. And when I came back to Hawaii years later, what I wondered was, why isn't there, I mean, you have these, like, food shows here, but, and you hear these commercials about buy local and so forth, but when you're getting rid of, as you mentioned, agricultural land, I guess with Ho'opili, that's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You're diminishing that argument by saying you have all this prime agricultural land, we're going to build homes on it. When, in fact, there should be, in fact, more farms and more production of crops and whether it's fruits and vegetables, all kinds of different crops that not only could be sold in Hawaii primarily, but also sold on the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. It makes absolutely no sense. But it makes sense if you want to keep certain markets the way they are and to keep the economy the way that it is. And that's my argument.
There are many factors that influence the cost of the basic purchase of fruits, vegetables, because we don't know these things, you know. Costco sells you cheap fruits, but it's been my experience that half of them spoil before you can go through because they've really been transported, bruised, and banged. And when you get home, you're guaranteed to have one or two. It's been my experience.
That's why I buy my stuff in the farmer's market. It's hand-picked.
Yeah.
you gotta go with fruits. I've noticed that, at least when I lived in parts of the mainland, you got to spend the time going through all that fruit. Even when I shopped at Whole Foods when I lived in L.A. years ago, took the time. I mean, and they're supposedly, and their stuff is supposedly better anyway, ostensibly. But you have to go through the time to go, like, pick through the plums and peaches and so forth and go, you know, this damage, this has got, you know, some hole in it or whatever. You got to take the time, sadly.
Well, the key, the answer, I think, to all of this would be to ask, to this bit of the discussion, it would be ask the local farmers here, how much, when they sell to the regular stores, how much do they get paid when they sell their produce to the stores? And you'd be shocked. Pardon me?
I'm wondering. That's what I was wondering, too.
Well, it's not that they don't get that much. I know of one particular farmer raises squash, and there are times he'll just basically he's better off by giving them away than trying to transport them to the store to sell them.
A lot of time it's marked up twice or three times, you know. So that I used to have my food in different stores, but
mm-hmm.
it got to a point where it wasn't profitable for them. And wouldn't be profitable for me if they wanted to make more profits.
Right. So you provide a food that you prepare to stores in.
I did when I first started out,
mm-hmm.
so that I could also get my meal bags put into their back.
And you cancel that.
And then it got to a point where it wasn't they could make more money, you know, buying organic groceries and jack it up like two or three times. So,
but that's very good. They gave me. I mean, when you're you have this restaurant now, but since you're also been on the sort of supply side in terms of providing, was it fruits or vegetables? I forget what you provide.
My finished foods.
Okay.
The actual product that she would make.
Yeah, that's very good experience, an experience that people also in the restaurant business don't always have.
No, that's why farmers markets are really key. It's really, really a good thing.
Now, speaking of farmers market, what's your experience? I've been told that some of them in various parts of the country and other places, they've gotten out of kilt because even that becomes, to participate in them, you have to pay a percentage of what you sell, or there's some kind of, which discourages many people from coming and participating
in
the farmer's market.
No, I never participate in percentage type of deals. No way. You know? I don't hardly make any money anyways.
Right, so you're not making much.
It's just going to be a booth rental, and that's it. And that what I really like about the farmer's market is you get to meet the farmers. You know, you get to ask them, is it organic or whatever you want to know. And you know where it's coming from.
Tell me more about your
meal plans,
because I spoke with a friend the other day, and I was showing the brochure, and he immediately, first of all, can I have that? And then he began to preach to his mother, Mom, you and Dad should look at this. He was breaking it down by the day. You really need this, and it's all about diet, and it's about consumption. And I'm sure he's listening now because he swore he'd be listening. He took my brochure. So tell us more about that. I think it's a pretty good.
Well, when I first started in this business, my husband constantly pounded my head, No restaurants. You don't know how many die every year.
Is that the way he sounded? No.
Pretty similar, if not louder. Anyway, so I had this idea because of the Small Business Association winner for 1 year, Dream Dinners and Super Suppers, that people would come in and make their own meals and assemble it. But then I didn't like that idea. I just thought, okay, there's a way to have a business without being a restaurant, and that's where I was able to do these meal plans. And then in 2011 I was nominated and chosen as the best vegetarian or something like that for the Lima Awards, and I wasn't even a restaurant. So at the banquet, that's when my husband said, okay, I guess your food's good enough to pair with wines. Because he figured that, you know, if we sold wines, we'd make the money, not the food.
Right. And
so I said, you can have your restaurant. So then, myself being a realtor, I knew location. I looked in on the corner of Ward and Kapi'olani. Right next to the city center. Hey, what can go wrong?
Mm-hmm. And business is doing good.
It's up and down. That's the thing about restaurants, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it's busy, you have to stay open.
Well,
you're saying it's up and down at that location?
Yeah.
Wow, because that's a prime location.
It doesn't matter for restaurants, you know, especially for vegan raw.
Right.
Well, you do have that Jack in the Box across the street.
Yeah.
So I know that attracts.
But then when there's, like, you know, different events at the Blaze, though, that's when we get crammed.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I thought. I was like,
or spring break. We've been pretty busy.
Because you're right across from the Blaisdell, and people would come and at least you got to have a few vegan types to go, hey, you know, there's a place we can go to after.
Do you have carryouts, takeout?
Yes, we do.
And that, the phone number, we didn't give a phone number.
We have a grab-and-go deli fridge that people can come in when the restaurant's closed. And you can just call the number on the door or call our number on the website, 536-9680, 536-9680.
You're at 909 Kapi'olani, the ground floor. And so that people know, like myself, I avoided going there. I've always been interested and heard about it when it first opened. But I drive by and would see no parking. And then the other day, we just by chance thought, drive this way, and we turn left, and enough parking, you could park an army squad.
No,
I mean, you can, there's room for parking.
Well, if there's no room, you have to call that number, 536-9680, and I have a tandem stashed away for you.
Yeah. But no, I'm saying there's adequate parking. You just don't see it, but now, and maybe a sign out front on the corner saying round back parking out on the ward side. Other than that, the food is good, and it's called Greens and Vines, and I'm doing this not for commercial purposes, but diet and food and consumption and intake dictates how well we are, how well off we are.
Exactly.
How good we sleep, how fast we run, how quick we think.
Well, when you consider that your entire body, every single cell gets replicated within 12 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's crucial that you give yourself the perfect fuel. Otherwise, you know, it shows on your skin. It shows on everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can actually reverse your age, your biological age, with diet and exercise.
Well, my guest here is Sylvia Thompson, Miss Sylvia Thompson, owner of Greens and Vines, and we're just talking about many things, environment and consumption of food in her restaurant. And so if you are interested, please drop by. And again, your hours are Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and daytime, 5 to 9 p.m.
Right.
And you said, you mentioned the word wine now. These are just straight wines.
Right.
They're not vegan wines or anything.
Oh, no, there's some vegans, mm-hmm. you know, vegan, biodynamic,
you serve those too?
Right, and it's labeled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I go by taste. I have high standards.
And you have what? I looked in your kitchen. There, you had a number, an army of people preparing with you. Are they your cadre of what, seven people?
We have about five or six that are making the food, and then we have one or two that are plating it. During the dinner or lunch.
Real quick, how does, from start to finish, how does a dish get developed? Where do you get the idea from? And then when does it make it to your menu?
Oh, okay. Sometimes either myself or somebody else gets an idea. Like, you know, there was a Romanesco cauliflower sitting in our refrigerator for over a week. And so this one guy, Michael, who does the plating of the meals, he came up with the idea that, oh, we should make a cauliflower buffalo wings.
Mm.
You know, he looked at it and he was thinking, oh, that would look like chicken, you know. So I said, go for it, you know. And so he came up with using the our ketchup recipe and then adding all these different, you know, flavors.
Well, if I make it back, I want to try the Kung Pao veggies, sauce, spinach salad, and orange dressing.
Okay, that one, you have to order the meal plan.
Okay, you the Kung Pao veggies?
That. Yeah.
Okay, well.
It has the Kung Pao veggies, and that's meal plan 4. So we're on meal plan, we're coming up on meal plan 2 this week.
So okay. So this is meal plan 4 with mango, salted cashews, spicy tamari, the sauce, baby bok choy, red bell peppers, mushrooms, and green onions.
Yeah, you know, I got this idea for the Kung Pao. I used to go to this place that was where Whole Foods is now all the time, and that was before I was a vegan,
mm-hmm.
and have that chicken Kung Pao. And then after they closed up, they finally disclosed their recipe. It was in the newspaper. So I grabbed the recipe, cut it out, and that's when I started eliminating, of course, the mm-hmm. the chicken, the cornstarch, the cooking oil,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm left with the basic stuff.
And I see the Living Lasagna local green salad is actually on this list, the meal plan, as well as the main menu.
Woohoo!
So, okay, well, I really appreciate Sylvia Thompson. Thank you for coming in and talking and sharing with us, and we'll talk some more about the environment and all. And again, Greens and Vines is the name of her restaurant, and you can contact her at the website or go there at 536-9680.
Nice meeting you.
Yes,
thanks,
ma'am.
So much.
Thank you for the experience. And we'll be back next week, folks, and we got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to be talking about some information on, there's a boat purchased by HCDA, and it's all the big, basically, you know what BS is, and we're going to ask the governor, why is he parading in this charade? A boat purchased by HCDA but given to the Ocean Safety, but really not given to. They'll have to pay rent and pay in to use the harbors for Howard Hughes Corporation. A big mess, folks. Trust me, I mean a big mess. And they're also talking about no cesspools and da-da-da-da. But right now, it's people out there at Sunset Beach, they're in a bind because truckers can't really go over the bridge. Over 30 tons can't go over the bridge, or 13 tons or 15 tons. So some of those people now can't get service to their cesspools that they're legally allowed. So we're going to be talking about all that. But watch that one on the governor and Ocean Safety. There's some hanky-panky going on there, folks, that just don't meet the smell test. And the sad part about it, it's something that Neil Abercrombie delivered and left at our doorstep. And it's not a pretty little baby. So we're going to talk about all of that, and we'll be getting back to you, and keep up and keep the faith. So we'll talk to you next week. Aloha. Thank you.
See you go. Not so long. Girl, I hate to see you go.
That's if you want to.
And the way I'm gonna miss you. Girl, I guess you'll never know. We've been together so long to have to separate this way.
I'll be right off here.
We've been together so long. I have to separate this way.
Okay, you ready?
I'm gonna let you go ahead on, baby, and let you come back home someday. I feel so good.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.